we're going to have a nice visit with Alan Mundy. Brand new album, Excelsior, which I think is a fantastic name for an album. It's also a fantastic name for a banjo, although I don't think that's where it fits in. We're going to start off the segment of the show with a tune from that album, one picked by Alan, Holler Up a Possum. Then we'll talk to Alan and we'll cut to a few more tunes. Alan Mundy, I think, the best banjo player of all styles. I think he's the banjo player's banjo player. How's that sound? Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. The audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a brand new tune, Holler Up a Possum, and it's a tune off of a brand new album, Excelsior, from my guest today, Alan Mundy. And Alan, I'm always happy to talk to you about music. I'm always happy to hear your new music, and Excelsior, which is on Pawtuxent, I will pronounce it, is a great collection. I'm so glad you got it out.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I always enjoy it. There are 15 cuts on this new album. All but two of them you wrote, and I will ask you as we get to it. I don't know some of these people. You have a lot of people helping you out on this. I don't know the author of the other two songs or tunes. There's nobody singing on it. I didn't mean to mislead anyone, but Elliot Rodgers, I don't know. He wrote a couple of tunes on this album and plays with you.
Yeah, Elliot is a guitar player, singer, songwriter, excellent. And several years ago, when I had trying to continue the Country Gazette moniker, I had an Alan Mundy Gazette, maybe it was called, I can't remember. We recorded an album
called that.
Made to Last.
Mm-hmm.
And Elliot was the guitar player, singer, and wrote several of the songs on that record. And he's still good friends, and I see him with some regularity. And he had this tune that he played on the guitar, which he does on my recording, called Holler Up a Possum. And I just thought it sounded real cool and kind of different in its own way. And so we recorded it, and I thought it turned out real slick myself.
It's a good one. He wrote that, and he also wrote Five Fall Down,
yeah. Which is an odd title.
And it's hard to say. That's why I paused, because I kept trying to think there must, but it's Five Fall Down. So that's, go ahead,
right.
I'm sorry.
And it's actually the melody of a song that he wrote, which he never quite completed, but I always liked the melody enough. It sounded like kind of an old-timey
tune,
and I like that. And I always tell people you need to ask Elliot why it's called Five Fall Down. It's a good little tune, too.
It is a good tune. This is a good collection of different styles that you play in, and you brought in a lot of musicians, and I mentioned earlier, I won't get to all of them, but there's so many people that are with you. You must have recorded this. I look at the studios. There must be 8-9 different studios involved. Maybe that's where they were mixed, or maybe that's where they were recorded. I don't know, but you were busy putting these songs together.
Yeah, it took a while, just to round up everybody and get into their schedule. I'd say I spent a year and a half, recording it and rounding up everybody and getting it scheduled in their schedule. And so, it was quite a project, I thought. And originally, I actually wanted it to be all mandolins. There's a wealth of mandolin players.
Well, there's a lot of them. Yeah, I think the biggest paragraph of musicians is filled with mandolin, including Billy Bright, who people who listen to this program know him from his own band, and also you've done a couple albums with Billy, the Bright Mighty, right. And the Es Muy Suerto, I believe I said that correctly.
And Billy actually produced this record, helped me organize it all, and was the sort of the thread that pulled me through all the moments of it. So he was a big help, and he appears on several cuts.
On several of them. You have a few mandolin players I don't know at all, which is nothing unusual. I do know Kim Warner, who's on a couple, at least one or two tunes. And Kim, I think the audience might recognize more easily from the Green Cards, which I don't think they're still in existence. But I knew Kim when he was with the Green Cards, and we had a nice talk with him about the band and what they were doing. But he seems to be, I think he's located in Texas, so I thought at one point he was going back home. I don't know how that worked out for him.
Well, I think the history of that is he's from Australia.
Right, yeah.
Was actually a student at South Plains College while I was there.
Oh, all right, okay.
So I knew him there, and then he did the green cards thing that you mentioned, and they were located around Austin. And
yeah.
He was there, and then he decided to move back home, and then maybe decided to move back to Austin. So I think he's actually, as we speak, he's now located back in Austin.
Okay.
And, yeah, he's a great player, and I particularly like the Manlin. I'm a big fan of the Dillards, and their sound was a lot of, in my mind, Dean Webb on the Manlin and Doug Dillard on the banjo, and just love their sort of duet sound. And so I have always had a fondness for Manlin, and, you know, played with Roland White for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
And loved being with Roland and making music with him, and Byron before that is a great Manlin player in addition to being a great fiddle player, but I always loved the Manlin and just kept note of them as I ran into them around the country. And I wish I could have gotten all the great Manlin players on that I've met and played music with, and but there just wasn't enough time and room.
Well, you take a good shot at it, Alan. You've got, just looking through the list, you've got Emery Lester, who I know through Mark Johnson. I wouldn't have known
right.
Emery except through Mark Johnson's recordings down in Florida where Mark is. And you've got Sam again. You've got a duet with Sam, which is Byron's buddies. And you also have Jeremy Chapman, who I'm going to guess is from the Chapman. There's a family of bluegrass musicians called Chapman. Is that where he's from?
That's it, exactly.
Okay.
I've relocated to Springfield, Missouri. My wife wanted to come back to her hometown when she retired, so we did that. And the Chapman brothers, or the family, are here, and they have a really, really excellent music store here called the Acoustic Shop. And I get together with them and pick a tune or two every once in a while. And Jeremy's just a really super-duper Manlin player, I think, you know. And I should mention another one that is in the area around here, Ron Pennington.
I was going to say, I do, and he's one that I don't know. I was looking through the list, and Ron Pennington I don't know. I also don't know Don Steinberg, who's this beautiful tune, the Untitled Waltz, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. But and there's one other that I don't know at all, I think, as I'm looking through here, but I think we've hit on most. Of course, I know Sam Bush. Sam does Byron's Buddies with you, but tell me about those other Manlin players. There's a big chunk of them in the crowds.
Ron, actually, I've known since he was probably a teenager. We used to come through Arkansas, Country Gazette. This would be Country Gazette. And would visit with Snuffy Smith, who was a entrepreneur of all sorts of things in the northern, northeast, western Arkansas around Springdale. And Ron hung out there, and so I've known Ron since then. And he went on to play with, if you remember the group, Paul Atkins and maybe Borderline.
Yeah.
Ron was with him with Ned Liberecki as the banjo player.
That's how I know the band, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's Ron, and he's back in Arkansas and plays with a really extra fine group around the area called Lonesome Road. And, I see them and pick a tune or two with them every once in a while. But Ron's just a really, in my mind, a world-class player, even though he's made his home in sort of states around northern Arkansas, southern Missouri now. And then Don Steinberg, again, I've known since one of the first festivals that Country Gazette played, maybe in 1972 or so. Don was with his brother, who was named John. And John and Don had a group called the Morgan Brothers. And don't ask, I guess they didn't think Steinberg would be as attractive, so they called themselves the Morgan Brothers.
If you have to pay by the letter, you're going to go with Morgan.
Right. And John was actually a board member of the IBMA for several years while I was on it.
Oh, okay.
And John was out in California. He was the banjo player. But Don, I've known since then and played music with him and done duo shows with him. It was just him and me. And he plays guitar, and he's a great, I'll say, in the jazz world, and he's a sort of a protege somewhat of Jethro Burns, and appeared with Jethro on many, many occasions as his accompanist, and he now is based in, he's in Evanston, Illinois, which is basically Chicago.
Well, that would make sense because that's where Jethro, I mean, for a lot of reasons, mandolin players want to emulate Jethro, but Jethro was in that area.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so. Don just is a really wonderful musician to play with, and all those mandolin players and all the musicians on the record. You know, one of the important things for musicians when you play together is you have to listen closely to each other. And, you know, when you play in a duo format where there's just, in this case, banjo and mandolin, you have to, you know, listen to each other closely and sort of have the soul of each other in mind as you play through these things. And I think they all did. They did.
I agree with you 100%. And I know that you have a great touch around any type of someone playing with you. But for mandolin, you know, banjos can be overpowering. They don't necessarily have to overpower a mandolin, but you have to be careful you're not, as you're kind of combining your thoughts and playing a tune, that you're not stepping over.
Definitely. Know. Yeah, and they in turn the same, and they all, every one of them, and all the musicians on the record, but the mandolin players, because I'm so fond of them, and just did a really crackerjack job. So if there's any mandolin players out there listening, and you want a really heavy dose of mandolin that's not a mandolin record, this would be one, I think.
That's true. There's one other guy, and I don't remember you ever playing with an electric mandolin. There's a guy named Paul Glass.
Paul Glass. Paul, you know, it's real interesting, as you mentioned all these people, I realize I've known them all for a very long time. Paul, I met, once again, probably back in the 70s. He was playing in a group around, he's from, oh gosh, I'm not sure where he's from, to be honest with you. But he was flying up around Poughkeepsie, New York, and with a band up there. And I met him, you know, once again, Country Gazette playing somewhere. And Paul sort of gravitated to, just as Don Sternberg sort of gravitated to Jethro Burns, Paul Glass sort of gravitated to Tiny Moore, who was the electric mandolin player in the Bob Wills band.
I don't know him. I know the Bob Wills band, but I don't know the other fellow.
Yeah, Tiny Moore. And Tiny was around, I think he was in California, is where he wound up living. And he and David Grisman got Jethro Burns to do a recording one time. This pretty fabulous, you know, sort of a jazz swing kind of thing. So Paul is a gravitated to the electric man, and although he's a wonderful acoustic bow, and so he's still around and still plays music, although he now lives in France part of the time, but who wouldn't if he but could, you know.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Alan Mundy, who is, I've said this before to you, I've said it on the air many times, playing my all-time favorite banjo player, and Country Gazette was my favorite band at the time that they were roaming the earth. And so many, by the way, it's on Pawtuxet Music, but it's also on, because I double-checked, Al Mundy's Banjo College. There's a website.
Yeah, well, I sell it, you know, but yeah. It's on the Pawtuxet label, which is a gentleman named Tom Minty, who...
That's who sent it to me.
Exactly, and he's located in the Washington, D.C. area, and has many, many, many fine, fine CDs.
Oh, yeah, sure. Great label.
Available on that label.
Also,
I'm proud to be there.
Well, it's a good label, and it's good for, it's a great album, but also on your website, if people are playing with a banjo or want to try to learn to play the banjo and want to go this route, You do have the tablature available for this Excelsior album.
Yeah, you know, that's something I got into a long time ago, of transcribing my solos from different records and making them available. And it's, I always felt, you know, when I was wanting to learn to play, there was a shortage of material available. The fact is, when I started, the only real book that was available was Pete Seeger's
book,
which I certainly got and worked out of, which to this very day is an excellent source for learning to play the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
And loved his playing and his music making and his banjo playing in particular. And but I've always thought it was sort of a something that I wished I had had when I was learning to play, was to have an album that you really loved, like, and Earl Scruggs has done it, you mm-hmm. know, in a sense, with his book.
Right.
So many of, but it'd be nice to have, you know, the Foggy Mountain Banjo album cabbed out, if it was available 40 years ago or 50 years ago.
Right, yeah.
It would have been a huge blessing for me. So I just like to do it, and there's a, I don't sell many of them, which is fine, but I just want, like, the idea of it being available, and that's kind of, in my mind, what I do. So
when we hang up, you will have a sale, because I just saw that today, so I got to go back and find it, get back into those things. You know what they do for me as a very, very pedestrian banjo player is they kind of motivate me.
Oh, sure, yeah, sure. Yeah. And I always think of, you know, even if you find just a phrase or two
right.
in a whole tune that attracts your attention and you have a curiosity about it, you can go see it and you put your fingers on it and you go, wow, that's where that sound comes from. I've actually played all those notes before. So,
you have, this is great, Alan. I don't want to take up your whole day, but we're going to talk more about this album. You have Lloyd Maines. We talked about some of the people. You have Lloyd Maines on here for Lloyds of Lubbock, and I think most people know who Lloyd is. They certainly probably know his daughter first now, Natalie, from the Chicks. They call themselves the Chicks now, but you have Lloyd Maines on here on a couple of things, and Lloyds of Lubbock is one, and there's another one further down the line, but tell us a little bit about Lloyd Maines.
Oh, man, well, when I moved to Levelland, Texas in 1986, Levelland is just 25, 30 miles west of Lubbock, and Lubbock was the home of a lot of people, players called the Maines Brothers, which was Lloyd and Kenny and I believe Steve Maines, and they were actually the second Maines Brothers. Their dads and uncles had the original Maines Brothers band, and this was a band that was originally called the Little Maines Brothers, but they sort of grew into the Maines Brothers. But Lloyd was involved in that, and he's, I think, in the Steel Guitar Hall of Fame.
He's a legend. He's a legend. I mean, everybody that knows, if you see him on a record, you know that there's going to be great steel guitar playing. So I do. You have him on Lloyd's of Lubbock, which is obviously about, I think, kind of about Lloyd. He also shows up on a thing with an accordion that you do, the 10-cent breakfast. Now, I'm going to get back to that tune in a minute, because I've not heard you record with an accordion, but let's talk a little bit more about Lloyd's of Lubbock and maybe a little bit more about that tune.
Alrighty, well, that's a tune for banjo players out there. It's in the key of E, and I just play it open E, except the fifth string is capoed as a B note. And it just allows you to have some different sensibility between the notes of an E scale and the open strings that are available to you. And as I wrote it and as I was playing through it, it sounded to me, just put me in mind of those, I'll go on YouTube and watch just steel guitar solos because I love steel guitar. The idea of doing this flash of notes across several strings and then just crunching down on one pedal and changing it somehow. So it's kind of opens with this banjo figure that is an E7, I'll tell you, and then just changing one note, it becomes an A7. And so I just had it pictured in my mind that, you know, it'd be good for a steel guitar. And also, a lot of these steel guitar instrumentals have sort of unusual, interesting chord progressions. So I tried to come up with something that, and it sort of, it has this sort of rising chord that has a stop in it. It's, I'll use the word dramatic. And then you go back to the regular picking part. But it just put me in the mind of a steel guitar. And I thought, man, there's none better than Lloyd.
Yeah, you're right.
I've known Lloyd, and he's a really very, very nice man. And is a longtime record producer and produced several of the Chicks back when they were Dixie Chicks.
Right.
Hit recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And Natalie and the other girls, mine is Lloyd's of Lubbock. Their little phrase is, thank the Lloyd.
I like it.
So it's just a tribute to him, and he played on it.
Yeah,
and I want to say this about his playing, and is, you know, there are machines that can measure if you're out of tune, you know, and they call it by cents. You're out of tune, you're off by 3 cents,
right,
or something.
Right.
But they don't make a machine that can tell you how in tune you are. And I just want to say Lloyd is the most in tune player I've ever heard in my life. You know, it's just, he's stunning, you know, how well, you know, because they don't have frets like we do.
No.
You know, they have to just do it by ear. And he's got a great, great, great ear. And he's, so anyway, and he told me it was kind of a tough tune to do. And I can hear his bar. He has to move his bar in there. Don't tell him I said that, but I can hear him do it. And the last time I communicated with him about it, after I sent him the CD, he said, oh, man, I forgot. I can't believe I played as much of the melody as I did. But he did.
It's a good one. I like it. Yeah, and so when we're talking about Lloyd, let's skip down. I probably won't hit every song with you to discuss, but
there
are certain things, like, so since we talked about Lloyd Maines, the 10th Cent Breakfast intrigues me because he's on there again, and you have an accordion player, and I honestly, Alan, I may have missed it. I don't know that you've recorded with an accordion. You maybe have, but I haven't heard it.
I haven't. That's my first effort with one, and let me talk about the tune first. Once again,
yeah, and the accordion, before I forget, the accordion player is Josh Baca, or Baca. Okay, go ahead. All right, I interrupt you. Go.
That's okay. And he's one of the sort of new, young hot shots of the, I'm not sure what he might call his music, but it's Tex-Mex. You know, he's around Austin there and plays with whatever the wonderful group of Hispanic players there are down there. And that was Billy Bright's idea to have, you know, that's what producers do, is they have good ideas, or supposed to. And he just, why he picked up on it is because I had mentioned to him that actually the very first instrument I ever played was the accordion. And it was because I have a younger sister and an older brother who both played the accordion, but my younger sister took lessons from a teacher back in the day when the teacher would come to your house. And my sister would sit and take a 30-minute lesson. And I remember the lady's name, her name was Nancy Carter, and she was a student at the University of Oklahoma and a beauty queen, and playing the accordion was her talent.
Yeah, okay.
And so my sister would take a lesson and then come in and show me what she had learned. And so I started, you know, and I kept up pretty well with what she was up to, but she decided to stop, and that was the end of my accordion career. But that's actually the very first instrument.
I didn't know that. I knew you played a guitar. I know you still do play a guitar, but I didn't know you played an accordion. But I did kind of think, I've never heard you play with one in a recording before, but it's different. I like it. But I mean, these are all great tunes, but I just had to skip down to that one.
That was written, that's my first tune that I ever wrote. And I did it as a teenager sitting at home watching country music on TV on Saturdays. And once again, I took particular notice of the steel guitar. And since you're well acquainted with Sonny Osborne,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the same time, I was sort of aware of Sonny Osborne, and not only his banjo playing, but their vocal harmonies had sort of a steel guitar quality to it. And I was sort of intrigued by all that. And so I wrote this sitting there one Saturday afternoon, listening to the steel guitars on the TV.
So you mentioned the harmonies of the Osborne brothers. Sonny did have a steel guitar in his head a lot, and a lot of horn playing, but he also had a lot of some I don't know where he got this Mexican sound, or he would pick up this Latin beat every once in a while, but their vocals, I think, were, you nailed it. I don't know how you did it at that age, but you listened well, I guess. But so I want you to now take us into one of my favorite tunes. I'm glad you picked this one out. Miss Kitty's Hornpipe. It's one of those ones that throws me right back into when I first discovered Alan Mundy's banjo playing. I want you to introduce Miss Kitty's Hornpipe. We'll play that for the audience, and I'll come back and talk to you just a little bit more. So give us a bit of an intro to Miss Kitty's Hornpipe.
A few years ago, I played a festival in Minnesota with my good friend Adam Granger. And on the show was a trio of musicians from that area called the Tune Junkies. Basically, what they did was come out and just sit down and play tunes. And I won't say it wasn't a show or anything, but it was really great just to hear these tunes, and a lot of them I had never heard before. So it was a real cool experience. So I came back home and wrote this, sat down purposefully to write a tune that they might play. Not that I asked them to or they willed or anything, but just a tune that was kind of like what they were doing. And so I wrote that Miss Kitty's Hornpipe. That's my wife, Kitty.
Oh, you know, I met her at one of those banjo camps. I remember she was back in the back. And but I would not have been able to tell you her name was Kitty if someone bet me money. But I remember her, yeah.
Right. She's a good bass player, and she actually is on the recording.
She's playing bass on Blue Hole Stroll?
Blue Hole Stroll, yeah, that's
okay.
Correct.
Let's do this. Let's get to Miss Kitty's Hornpipe. And then we'll play that for the audience, and then we'll come back and talk some more. You're listening to Alan Mundy. We're talking about his brand-new album, Excelsior. And it's a great album. And we'll play this tune. We'll be back and talk to Alan a little bit more and talk about a few more tunes, and you'll get into one of my favorite tunes on the album. So here we go. Kitty's Hornpipe. There, that was Miss Kitty's Hornpipe from the brand-new Excelsior album from my guest today, Alan Mundy. Alan, that tune takes me back, I'm telling you, to the early banjo sandwich days and all those Poor Richard's Almanac and all the hornpipes and things that I heard in my head that just absolutely made me want to try to play like Alan Mundy, which didn't happen, but, I mean, at least the inspiration part was there. But that tune just takes me back instantly when I hear it to those days.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad about that.
Oh, I think it does. I think it is a good thing. We've talked about a lot of the tunes on here. Of course, Byron's Buddies, we know who that's in reference to, and you're there with Sam Bush, and still to this day I have on vinyl. There is no CD of Sam and Alan together again for the first time, but someday that may happen. But let's talk about Byron's Buddies. That's just you and Sam, and you two go back a long way, back to Poor Richard's Almanac, and ever since then and beyond, I think.
Right. Well, you know, Byron was a big influence, I believe, in both our lives as a musician and a friend. Certainly I played with Byron was in Country Gazette for several years, and Sam knew Byron from when Sam was a teenager, going to Weezer, Idaho to the fiddle contest there in Weezer.
Let me take a second here, because people may not remember that. You see him mandolin all the time. He does all kinds of interesting things. Great player. But he was initially, as my memory, and leading into Poor Richard Almanac, he was a fiddle champion.
Was the Grand National Junior fiddle champion, I'll say a couple years in a row.
Yeah.
And as a result of going to that contest, he met Byron out there, and they were friends forever and ever. And I didn't want to with this tune that I wrote called Byron's Buddies, I tried to write a tune that was Byron-esque in a sense, in the way that I knew him initially as a Texas Oklahoma style fiddle player. And so I wrote that kind of a tune, and I didn't want to give the impression that Sam and I were the only buddies he had, but I wanted to say that anybody that played music with Byron for the fun of it was one of Byron's buddies.
Mm.
So that was just my point in that tune, and just to speak his name and speak somewhat to the music that he played and showed me, and we played together.
Do you, I like the tune. Anytime you and Sam can play together, that fills up my what I need to hear as far as musically speaking. And your solos do too, Alan. I mentioned this to you before. There's a couple of solos on here. I want to save the hymn for Slim at the end, but I know there's another solo on here that you play that's Birthday Waltz, which is a really pretty, really pretty tune.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, you sit around and you don't have anybody to play with, and you just have these ideas that really aren't necessarily band-oriented kinds of things. And so you wind up playing them as a solo piece. And those are the two that I did. And that Birthday Waltz is from way back in the 70s, 80s. You know, I've had it since then, and just decided to, I had the courage put it out there and let people hear what there was going on there.
I'm glad you did. But let me ask you this before I go any further. Other than the legendary Moose Tracks?
Moose Trots.
Moose Trots. Is there any, that was your guitar, right? You were playing guitar on that?
No, that was a recording. The gentleman that played guitar was named Harlow Wilcox.
That's right. I knew that because of the name Harlow. So have you played guitar on a record that you've recorded that I would have seen or heard from?
Well, you know, there is.
Because I know you play very well. Now, maybe your style, I don't know. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But,
there is a lady in the Philadelphia area named Beth Mead, who is a banjo player and has a group. She has a group called Big Band Joe, and I say that sort of pointedly, that it's not big banjo, it's big band Joe. And she likes all the tunes from the early part of the previous century, you know, the sort of the Great American Songbook. Has a couple of recordings out that I played guitar and took solos on. I thought it turned out okay. You know, I'm not a great technician on the guitar, but I enjoy playing. And
you are a very good swing. You're a very good, well, we used to call gypsy swing. I don't know what's called gypsy jazz, but I've heard you, not on an album, but I've heard you like in the distance somewhere. I knew it was you,
right.
And I've heard more stories about it. I just don't think that I've heard a recording from you that has your guitar styles on it. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, I'm going to Nashville in a week or two to record with Jim Hurst.
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
And Jim is embarrassed to be on a recording playing the guitar with him. And banjo, he's actually a
pretty good banjo player. He is. He's a very good banjo player. And you know, his idol was Sonny Osborne.
I don't doubt it.
And I've seen him play on stage. And well, you're right. He's like, wow, wait a minute. This guy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Emery Lester, speaking of banjo players, Emery's a really great banjo player, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a... He's a fantastic musician, and I'm going to try my best to play what I can on this tune. It'll be a tune called Back Home Again in Indiana, which is a pop tune from the early part.
Absolutely, yeah. So what guitar are you going to play? You're not going to play that K that you bought from Mike Ritchie's guitar place, are you?
No. I actually have to borrow one from Jim.
Well, I think you'll have one. I think you'll have an extra one, right?
Yeah. I don't really have a proper, myself, own a proper, well, that's not true. I do.
Well, but, you know, why?
But I'm going to.
Why travel with it if you can get one from Jim Hurst? I bet it'll sound really good. Whatever he's got, I bet it's ready to play when you get there.
I told him it's got to be easy to play or I can't do it.
Listen, I mentioned Mike Ritchie's guitar shop, and I, by the way, when I started doing this program, one of the first people I set my sights on was Slim Ritchie. And I looked back in my archives today. It was December of 2013 that I caught up with the most dangerous guitar player in the world. And spoke to Slim Ritchie at length about everything I could about Ridge Runner Records and everything he was doing. And I think, Alan, we even got into a bit of a discussion about the social contract theory of government. I think it's in there.
Because
he said, I never signed any contract. And I said, I know, but it's kind of implied that somebody signed for you. He said, well, I didn't sign it. I said, okay.
No, Slim was not in the bomb-throwing way, but he was in the social way an anarchist.
Yeah.
And he felt like the world should just be as it happens day by day.
That's right.
And we've had discussions, and all I ever said was, you know, Slim, if it was the way you wanted it, when you got to the end of your driveway, there would be a toll road, you know, and it would be owned by somebody else. And so you couldn't even leave your house without somebody else.
I love talking to him and all those Ridge Runner. I had every one of the Ridge Runner records that came out. Mm-hmm. And so it gave me, again, more exposure to you and Sam and things you were doing in the Jazzcrafts album. Still to this day is one of my all-time greatest hybrids. I guess we would call it a hybrid today. So it leads me up to this beautiful tune that you did. One of the solos, the hymn for Slim, which I assume it's got to be Slim Ritchie. When I think of you, I don't think of any other Slims other than Slim Ritchie.
No, it very much is. It's my little tribute to him. And I'm not sure he would even have liked it. I don't know if it's his kind of thing, but it doesn't matter. It's my kind of thing. And Slim, when I first got a guitar, I bought one from back in my day, I saw it at the TV repair shop guy that my dad knew from the American Legion, because everybody that was in my dad's orbit at that time was a veteran. So the gentleman had a TV repair shop in Norman and sold guitars, and I saw it and wanted to play guitar, so I made a deal with him. I paid, I think, $5 either a month or a week, I can't remember, and it cost $35 or $40. Mm. It was a K archtop guitar, and that was my first guitar. And when I wanted to learn to play guitar, I looked in the phone book and found Mike Ritchie's Guitar Center, which was the closest one to my house, just a few blocks away, so I could walk over there easily. And I met Slim when I was, I'll say, 14, and I knew him till the day he died. He was a really great friend and a mentor, musical and otherwise, alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, and he produced and manufactured and had the label Ridge Runner, which I recorded, and Country Gazette recorded for, Marty Stewart recorded for, Ray Sharp, who was a sort of early blues guy, and he recorded a lot of different kinds of music on his label, and was just a wonderful, wonderful person and very much of a character.
Was that catalog preserved? We've talked about this before, and it's kind of bounced off of the concept, but I mean, were the Ridge Runner records either purchased by somebody else, or we don't know where they've gone?
Oh, as I said, Slim was kind of an anarchist, and he was the same way about his business. And,
okay.
A lot of it didn't survive in a way that, you know, would be comfortably passed on. So, you know, we just have to be fortunate enough to maybe find the vinyl versions of them and use record stores and let that be his heritage. Because he didn't have much. In fact, his several people he gave, I'll call them the masters, back to them. And, you know, Roland White recorded an album called I Wasn't Born to Rock and Roll.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which was on the Ridge Runner label, and he gave that back to Roland, and Roland had it released on another label. So Anselm didn't, I don't think, got anything out of it. Yeah. He was, you know, he was like, kind of like music. He played music out into the air, and wherever it lands, it's yours. You know, and that's the way he kind of was to a certain extent with his business, you know, after. And he used to say, and truthfully, you know, that contracts weren't worth the paper they were written on. And so he never fooled with them too much. He would do it just because people would want him, but he thought, you know, a man's word was what you were supposed to go by.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I that's what we're supposed to go by, and we all try to go by that, but sometimes you leave an opening, you don't really want to be that vulnerable.
You've got it, you know, you understand, Steve. Mm-hmm. You're in that world. So,
I am.
But that's where Slim was. So a lot of his stuff is just out in the ether.
Oh, maybe it'll bounce back around, come back down someday. I don't know.
You never know. You never know.
Well, Jazzgrass is on a DVD, is on a CD, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, listen. Yeah. I want to. We've talked about a lot about the album and the effort that went into it. And I kind of bounce around because different things. The Untitled Waltz, The Last Cut, gorgeous, gorgeous tune. But I've talked about Slim, and I want you to introduce us to the last segment that we're going to do. And when we do this, when we go to him for Slim, I'll let you go. And thank you so much for your time. I haven't seen you in a while, probably not since you and Billy were in Raleigh, and I went up and chatted about the newest album. I haven't seen you physically forever, so that'll change. Yeah. That'll change now that we're out getting about. But let's do this. Yeah. And I want to remind people, too, that in Alan Mundy's new album on Pawtuxent Music, it's called Excelsior. Great, great. When does the official, is it out now for real?
Yeah, it's been released.
Okay. And then I would also ask people if they want to learn more about Alan's banjo playing, the Al Mundy Banjo College is still open, although I noticed that there was one tab that was empty. I don't know if it was a blog or you know, something to be just like nothing here. Nothing here yet. So put something there by the time we go back.
All right.
Just whatever it is.
I'll do my best.
Okay. So let's do a short intro to him for Slim, and then I'll let you get back to your life.
All righty.
Well, go ahead.
This is my tribute to my very good longtime friend and musical mentor, David Michael Slim Ritchie. And the reason when I knew him originally, he was Mike, and he changed his moniker to Slim because he didn't like who Mike was, and he felt like to have a change in life, he needed a change in the name. So this is my tribute to him. It's called Him for Slim.
All right. Thanks. That's a great tune, great character, and I know that you valued his ideas and his leadership back in those days, and we all enjoyed the music. So this is a great tribute to Michael Slim Ritchie. And Alan, I'll let you go, and take care. I hope to catch you somewhere down the road.
Okay, Steve, that'd be great.
All right.
Thank you.